Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's One Key Idea session on cost of quality and its application for evaluating the ROI of testing. I'm Rex Black, president of RBCS, a worldwide testing and quality assurance firm serving clients ranging from small startups to Fortune 20 global enterprises. Since 1994, RBCS has delivered insight and confidence to hundreds of clients around the world. We have a team of international consultants that deliver customized training, consulting, and expert services for companies that are looking to improve their test and quality assurance practices. If you have any questions during the course of this brief webinar, you may submit them throughout the presentation via your webinar interface. Please note they will only be answered at the end. But since this will be quick, your wait will be short. All right, so a common misperception associated with testing groups is that they are a regrettable necessity, a cost center. This is not true, but it is commonly believed. And this could be proven to not be true, at least in the vast majority of cases, and in every case that I have looked at, by the application of a technique called cost of quality, which is a well-established way to measure the value of testing activities, among other things. That was not its origin, but it's it proves to be very useful in that regard. So the way that this works, the way the cost of quality works, is that you look at costs associated with having a product, and some of those costs have nothing whatsoever to do with quality, so they can be ignored, but some of them do. And the four costs that have to do with quality are cost of prevention. So this is money that you spend to have the product that is spent to prevent defects from existing in the product to begin with. And then there's what's called cost of detection, or sometimes also called cost of appraisal. This is money that you spend, at least if you're trying to use to understand testing ROI, money that you spend on testing that you would have spent even if you didn't find any defects. Okay, cost of prevention with respect to testing is generally not an applicable cost, because cost of prevention have to do with things like training and doing root cause analysis and corrective action, preventive action steps and those sort of things. And that's generally not something that accounts for any significant amount of the QA budget at all. But cost of detection does. So that's the, as I said, the cost that you spend on testing that you would have spent on testing even if you didn't find a single defect. And then there's a cost of internal failure. These are the costs from a testing ROI point of view. These are the costs that are incurred in testing because you found defects. So look at examples of the two. So the time spent writing a test, or creating test data, loading test data, setting up test environments, planning for a test, participating in a user story grooming or refinement session. Those are all things that you would do as a tester, regardless of whether you were going to find any bugs. So those are all costs of detection. Okay, and a lot of the costs of detection do fall into effort, right? There are some resource costs, and test environments can be expensive, for example, but for the most part, they will fall into effort, these costs. So cost of internal failure, this would include time spent executing a test, a second or third or fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh up the dot, time because it had previously failed. It would be time spent writing a defect report. It would be time spent working with a developer to help figure out the root cause of a defect and get it removed. It would include time to run a set of regression tests, which hopefully would be automated, but the time spent on those would be the cost of internal failure. So if you would do it, whether you found a bug or not, it's a cost of detection. If you would do it only because you found bugs, it's a cost of internal failure. Now, the cost of external failure, these are the costs associated with defects that make it out into production. And so this includes not only the cost associated with rectifying the defect, but also, you know, other costs that may be associated with kind of cleaning up the mess. And a significant amount of your tech support team's time is generally going to be associated with cost of external failure, time they spend on the phone with customers who are calling up and customers or users talking about actual incidents that are not, you know, not misuse of the product, but yeah, it's actually broken. Those would be costs of internal failure. Okay, so why does testing have a positive ROI based on cost of quality? Well, generally speaking, if you look at the cost of external failure on a per defect basis, it will massively overwhelm the costs of detection and internal failure on a per defect basis. And so every defect we find typically presents the organization with a dramatic cost savings opportunity. David Rico, in a study that he did for the Department of Defense, said that the typical ROI for testing was about 800%. And that is in line with what I've seen using cost of quality, though I will say that the range, the variability is enormous. I've seen it as low as 150%, I think, one time. So that would be that every dollar spent on testing, you get that dollar back plus another $1.50. And I've also seen it as high as 3,200%. So every dollar spent on testing, you get that dollar back plus $32. I've never seen it be zero or negative using cost of quality. Now, I'm going to give you a brief run through an example of this so that you can see how this technique works. For a particular project. If you look at this and say, hey, this is really cool, and I want to use this, I've got a link to a blog post down there. Back in the day when I used to spend time doing blog posts, which I have gotten out of the habit of, I'm afraid, because I'm just too busy. But that blog post, even though it's been out there a while, the tool is still relevant. As I said, this is a very well-established technique. It goes back actually 70 years, late 1950s, I think. No reason to think that the blog post is stale. And that tool is a spreadsheet that you can download and use to do these calculations. So let me just show you an example. And then I can get my screen to advance. And then I'll go to Q&A and see if you all have any questions about this. Excuse me. So test budgets. Well, let me back up a little bit. This is an example from a project that I ran as a test manager. And because of that, I had some insights that In your case, you may have to extrapolate or calculate, but I knew very precisely. So what we're going to do in this analysis is we're going to go through and look at that test budget of $1 million that you see at the upper left there. And for those of you listening on a podcast, I'm going to try to be as explicit about this as possible. But I would encourage you to download the slides and look at them to try to follow along, if you're listening to the podcast version of this. What I'm going to try to do is take the test budget, and I'm going to break it down into the detection costs and the internal failure costs. So those are the two costs associated with testing that I talked about before, right? And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in some other numbers that are to some extent extrapolated or calculated to calculate the external failure cost. And I'm going to use that to do the calculation that I alluded to on the previous slide, which is to say I'm going to calculate the detection cost per defect, the internal failure cost per defect, and the external failure cost defect. And I'm going to use that to calculate the cost savings that was generated, the net cost savings and the net ROI of testing that was achieved based on this particular project. So we start off with a test budget of $1 million. How do I know that? Well, because I ran the project, and that was the amount of money that was ultimately paid out by the client to my company to run this test project for them. Now, a significant percentage, 10% of that money went to creating things that would have future value. So there's a lot of money invested in setting up environments and automating the environments. Automating tests and that sort of thing. The $100,000 that was spent on those kinds of things that would have value, not just on this initial release of the project, but on future releases, I'm going to take those out. I'm going to take that $100,000 out of the million here because I'm trying to calculate the ROI on this project only. Now, if you're trying to calculate the ROI for a product over a long term, then you would not do that. Okay, so that operation that I'm doing, taking the $100,000 out of the million, I'm doing that specifically because this was a first release and the things that were being built were things that would have value going off into the future. Okay, so hopefully that's clear. Now, the $500,000, the next figure there, the retest cost, the $500,000, this is the amount of effort that was spent doing regression testing, doing confirmation testing, updating defects to close them out or reopen them, updating tests when the tests needed to change, so forth, based on defect fixes. So those are all internal failure costs. So I need to take that $500,000 out of the test budget as well, at least when I'm calculating the detection cost, because what I'm trying to do is calculate net detection costs. So $1 million minus the $100,000 that was invested to create valuable assets, minus the $500,000, which we'll see down below as part of the internal failure costs, that gives us $400,000. So that's the net detection cost. So $400,000 is what we spent that we would have spent on this project alone, that we would have spent even if we hadn't found a single defect. Now, of course, we did find defects. How many defects did we find? Well, we found quite a few. Of those, I'm only going to look at the 1,500 must-fix defects. So these are the basically the high-priority defects, priority one defects that had to be fixed for release. I'm discounting the other defects that we found, and the reason for that is I don't want to get into a debate if I'm showing this to management, this kind of presentation to management, about whether I could feather my nest somehow or another by finding a bunch of, you know, relatively meaningless defects. Okay. So if I take 400,000 and I divide it by 1,500, I get 267. So that is the detection cost per bug or per defect. Right. Now you might say, well, but the detection cost is based on the assumption that these are costs that you would expend whether you found defects or not. Well, that's true, but we did find defects, right? So we can calculate a detection cost per bug. So don't be confused by that apparent contradiction. It's actually not a contradiction. So now we're going to calculate the internal failure cost. So this is the 500,000. You see that showing up there as retest cost. So that's just basically a value that I pulled down from the detection cost column above. Right? Basically, it's accounting. I'm putting it in the right place. Now, there's also the test bug fix cost. Now, this is based on what I knew about the typical cost of a programmer's salary at that time in that location and the amount of effort that was expended. I knew the headcount and I knew how long they were primarily engaged in fixing bugs rather than writing new features. So that came to $750,000. So this is pretty easy calculation. 750,000 plus 500,000 gives you 1.25 million. So that's the net internal failure costs. Okay. And We can then, again, take the must-fix test bugs, 1,500. We divide 1.25 million by 1,500. That gives us $833 internal failure cost per bug. So that basically means that to find and fix a bug, including the developer's effort to fix it, costs $1,100. So as long as that is cheaper than the cost of finding and fixing a bug that crops up in production, you will have a positive ROI on this project. And it definitely is. So the external failure costs, what I did is I went and I looked at the sustaining costs over the first 6 months of release. Sorry, I need a kind of a dry throat there. So the reason I only counted the first 6 months was because after that, there'd been a lot of changes made, new features added and so forth. If I had counted it out longer than that, then that would make my ROI go up. And I always want to be suspicious about things that make my ROI go up in ways that management might challenge. So I wanted to keep it short. So it's $3 million. That was the cost that was paid for the entire development, QA, tech support, et cetera. But basically the entire engineering operation in that 6 month period is about $3 million. Some of this is extrapolated figures. Some of this is money or figures that I actually have. And I went and canvassed various managers, line managers on this project, about what percentage of their time they were spending fixing bugs that were in production. And they said about 50%. Some of them said more than that. I decided to use the low end of the number I got, again, trying to keep this conservative. So if we say that only half of that $3 million was spent on fixing bugs, the net external failure costs then are $1.5 million. And notice I'm not even including in here the various other kind of intangible things like reputational damage and so forth that would push that number up. It was $1.5 million. Now, there happened to be 500 must-fixed bugs found in the released software, about 500. I mean, I'm kind of using round numbers here to make the math easier. But what we get if we take 1.5 million divided by 500 is $3,000 per bug. I mean, that's average external failure cost per bug. Obviously, some cost more, some cost less, but that's the average. That's pretty cheap. I've run into clients where their calculations of the external failure cost per bug was in the tens of thousands, and in some cases, $100,000-ish dollars. I had a colleague tell me that he did a study like this for a bank in the UK, and it was £100,000 was their average cost of a failure in production. So let's calculate the return on investment. We know it's positive now because 3,000 minus 1,100 is 1,900. So that's the money that was saved per bug. So you see that figure there in the return on investment quadrant. So, and we know that there were 1,500 must-fix bugs found. That's the other figure we see there. So if we just multiply those two together, then the net benefit of testing was $2.85 million. So in other words, if all 1,500 of those bugs had gone out into production, the cost at $3,000 per bug over the cost at $1,100 per bug, it would have cost them an additional $2.85 million. To detect and remove those bugs, to say nothing of the massive reputational damage of putting something out there that has 1,500 bugs as opposed to 500, or actually not 1,500, sorry, 2,000, 1,500 plus 500. So now I want to calculate my net, my ROI. And so to do that, and anytime you're going to calculate the return on investment, you take the net benefit of the investment and divide it by the cost of the investment, what the investment was. So I take 2.5 million, I divide it by 400,000. That gives me 713%, slightly below Rico's figure, notice. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute, that's not the right math. You should divide it by the million because that was what it was actually spent. But I would say, I would push back on that a bit and say, well, why should I be penalized in my ROI calculation for the costs of internal failure since those were 100% associated with mistakes that were made by the development team? But you know, if you feel like, you know, you're going to get a lot of pushback on that, you need to do the math both ways, right? I mean, my ROI is only 285% if I divide by a million. 285%, anybody getting that in the stock market lately? Nope. Oh, that's pretty difficult to pull off. 285% ROI, 713% ROI, these are pretty stellar returns on investment, right? So that's cost of quality in a nutshell. The thing I love about this is that it's just so simple, right? It's addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. It's all stuff that you knew before you were out of grade school. I mean, I bought a book once and that topic was software engineering ROI calculations. And like within, 50 pages, the guy was off on second order differential equations. I just put the book down. I'm like, even if I could go back and refresh my memory on my college math courses, how to do second order differential equations, I am never, ever going to sit in a room full of executives and managers and walk them through how that would work, right? And it's just going to come across as an attempt to bamboozle them with math, which is not going to go anywhere. What you want to do with these models is keep it really, really, really simple and transparent, right? And underestimate so that if anybody ever questions your math or questions your assumptions, you recalculate based on the assertion that they are making and bam, your ROI goes up. And typically then that will end the conversation, so there you go. Handy little technique for estimating ROI of testing. So I'm going to go ahead and put the advertisement up here. And this will give you all of our coordinates. Now, I got a question from Purna here saying, could you please share the presentation? Already been done. It's at the website, rbcs-us.com. Go out there, search around a little bit. You will find it. Okay. I got a question from an anonymous attendee. So writing regression test cases, once a defect has been found, is it a cost of detection or internal failure? Okay, so I got a regression test. I guess it kind of depends on, am I writing this regression test specifically because of a defect? Or am I writing a regression test because I need a regression test in that area? If I'm writing the regression test specifically because of the defect, and I absolutely wouldn't have written that regression test if I hadn't found that defect, and I guess it's a cost of internal failure. Though even in that case, I tend to wobble towards cost of detection, because to me, writing test cases is typically a cost of detection. So another question from Purna here, how can we show as a quality manager that because of process improvements and multiple specific cycles of execution, we have saved cost and increased quality? Okay. So now you bring me to an interesting point with this. What can I do with this metric? I think this metric is a useful one to include as a KPI for a testing organization. However, by itself, it can be a dangerous metric. And if you focus too much on optimizing the ROI according to cost of quality, it can lead you in a bad direction. Here's why that's the case. Notice that the way that I get a positive ROI here is very much driven by the differential. Well, it's not very much. It's entirely driven by the differential between the cost of a defect found and fixed in testing versus the cost of a defect found and fixed in production. So notice that as the number of defects goes down in terms of the defects found in testing, this ROI may move in the quote unquote wrong direction, right? Because you are spending more per bug found, right? But of course, it's actually moving in the right direction, organizationally speaking. So when you participate in an ongoing shift left endeavor within your organization, and once you successfully shift discovery of defects left, and you're finding fewer and fewer defects, you will tend to see this metric go down. Your ROI will go down. And they need to make sure that people expect that they understand that. Other important metrics to include to kind of have some balance here would be your defect detection effectiveness, right? So that's the how many defects get past you. Now, I'll point out, if you think about the numbers I showed you, my defect detection effectiveness on that project was actually pretty low. I found 1,500 out of 2,000 defects that were apparently present in the product at the time of release. That's only a 75% defect detection effectiveness. That's not very good. Average is 85%. Why was my defect detection effectiveness so low? Because there were so many bugs. There were just a lot of bugs in that product. And that's so this is typically what you'll see is that when there's a lot of bugs, your ROI measured according to cost quality will tend to go up, but your defect detection effectiveness will tend to go down. So what you want to do is set targets there and make sure that you're being intelligent. In that situation, if I run that as a long-term organization, I would have focused on increasing DDE to at least get it to 85%, though typically I'm going to want more like a 90% range, especially for the priority one defects, which is what we were calculating there. 90 to 95% is really where I'm going to want to be. I'm not going to worry so much about ROI as long as it continues to be positive, which is generally what I say about any testing activity. I did a test automation assessment for a client a couple of years ago, and their ROI was respectable. It's 150% or 125%, something like that, for their test automation. And the manager's like, oh, are we doing it right? Well, should we get getting more back? What's the right number? I said, look, man, any number with a plus sign in front of it is a right number when it comes to testing. You're able to prove that you're not just breaking even, you're saving the company money in addition to all the intangible benefits that you are providing, then that really ought to be the end of the discussion. Let's see what else we got here. Porta says, thank you for one of my answers. So that's great. You are welcome, Porta. Colin asks, how do we get the cost figures in our own company? Okay, so you notice that some of those numbers I had and some of those numbers I extrapolated or projected, right? If you look at headcount and if you go out to like salary.com, you will be able to estimate based on the typical hourly salary of a software engineer in your particular region, you'll be able to estimate those cost figures pretty close. And that actually is probably what you would want to do in most cases rather than use actual numbers, because it's, you know, very sensitive within organizations to use numbers that could in any sense be used to reverse engineer people's salaries. So, you know, I would recommend just going out and using headcount numbers. If you want to try to look at tangible assets, physical assets, the value of test environments and those sort of things, you can try to do that as well. The trouble is if you get too caught up in that, then you're like, okay, well, what's the value of the production environment and what's the value of, you know, production downtime and test environment, and you start to get off into some wonky math, and then you're going to have a bunch of assumptions that you're going to have to explain if you're going to put this presentation in front of management. And all you got to do is screw one of those things up and your credibility will just evaporate on this whole thing, right? And people will walk away from that going, yeah, that was a bunch of, smoke and mirrors, and then, you know, the ROI is probably negative. So, I would say just keep this super simple kind of thing you want to be able to explain to a manager, you know, you saw I was able to explain the example in, 5 minutes. So, you know, that's the kind of thing you want to be able to do. Walk people through. And now, you know, and also, of course, look for the right time to make this pitch. All right. So Colin says, thumbs up. Thanks, Rex. You are certainly welcome, Colin. Purna's got a follow-up question. Do you have any example template for showing the QA savings and increasing quality? If yes, could you please share? Go back to the link that I showed earlier. In fact, let me see if I can't do this. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put this link into the chat. And that, by the way, is my house in the background, and that's my foot bottom there. I'm wondering what you're seeing. All right, let me... Okay, so I just sent that out as an answer, and I'm also going to put it in the chat and send that out to everybody. So now you will have that. All right. So another question from Purna, who is a very curious fellow. Thank you for all the good questions. Obviously paying a lot of attention here. How often as a quality manager do I have to report the cost of quality? So kind of to what I said earlier, I would tend to have this as one of my KPIs that I look at. So however often you report your KPIs, quarterly or something like that, say. Now, the example that I showed was on a project basis. Again, you're probably going to want to do this on a per product or just the overall QA organization basis. So, you know, you're gonna have to tweak this a little bit. The example I gave is a little different than what you're trying to do, but you know, I'd say like quarterly or so be a good answer. And I get a thank you, sir, again from Purna. Well, thank you for the good questions. Final question from Purna: could you please explain more of future value of assets? So, again, in your situation, Purna, you would not be pulling the future value of assets out of the calculation. You would be using the overall calculation. So regardless of whether people spent time, say, creating a fancy test automation infrastructure that was going to be used primarily on future releases, that's still a cost of detection and you would just include it as such. So this calculation would be a little bit cleaner. This calculation would be a little bit cleaner if I didn't pull the future value of assets out. And then it would have bumped the net detection costs up to 500,000, just like the retest costs were 500,000. So that would have pushed my ROI down a little bit, but not enough to really matter. You can rerun the math when you go out and download that spreadsheet, that link I just showed you. All right, so we ran a little long. These one key ideas are supposed to be about 30 minutes or so forth, but Purna says, yes, sir. Yeah, I was pretty confident, Purna, that you were going to be going to that link like right after you got off of here to follow up further up. So enjoy. So I want to thank everybody for joining. We ran a little long, but we had good questions. So, you know, I like to go long when we got questions and didn't lose a lot of listeners. So that's good. So I hope you enjoyed this free webinar from RBCS. We do these free webinars as a service to the software testing community because at RBCS, we are a not just for profit company. If you enjoy our free webinars and feel that they demonstrate solid insights into the kinds of testing challenges you face, please make RBCS your preferred software testing vendor for any and all expert services, consulting, or training. We are happy to provide a quote for any such help you may need. Contact us as shown here, info@rbcs-us.com. Thanks for all the good questions and good interaction. And I hope you learned something valuable today. And we'll take that back to your work and put it to use. See you next time.